Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. The NAMM Foundation is working to assure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow with music, and that music is part of daily living for everyone. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hi, everyone. Mary Lurson here, Executive Director of the NAMM Foundation, and welcome to this episode of Talking Up Music Education. We are here live at Bands of America Music for All event here in Indianapolis. 16,000 music education students from high schools from 100 communities are here at the Grand Nationals for Music for All. And I'm delighted to have with me our special guest, Mark Goff.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mark, owner of Pages Music. And I also have to say, former very serious partner in crime, who is the former chairman of the NAMM organization. Mark, so great to see you.
Good to see you, Mary.
We had quite a run.
We did.
Taking the hill in Washington, D.C.
Had a good time.
Yeah, and we're so grateful for your service. And now we've released you back into Indiana, and you're still having a good time, right?
We are having a great time in Indiana.
That's great. Tell us about Pages Music, its history, its support and service for music making in this great state.
Yeah, Pages Music is one of the oldest music businesses in the country. We were founded in 1871, 146 years ago, in Terre Haute, Indiana. We spent our first 100 years being the typical community music store, selling all things musical, from pianos to organs to radios and record players and everything along the way. Then in the mid-70s, we began focusing more on the school music business and moved to Indianapolis. And then in the early 90s, we focused exclusively on the school music business, and we've been building that platform ever since. Now we serve over 450 music programs throughout the state of Indiana, thousands of band and orchestra students each week. We have about 55 full-time employees, three specialty shops within our company, and our business is completely focused on helping kids make music.
Yeah, it's remarkable. You know, we look back at the history of a company like yours, it really reflects all the changes and communities and industry in a state like this.
Yeah, that's right. You know, going back before my time, there was a time during the First World War and Second World War when they were selling, radios and record players and records. They had a huge record department.
So it was growing with technology,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, of course, it changed.
Changed
over the years, and, now we're dedicated exclusively to school band and orchestra instruments.
Mm-hmm. How many schools did you say?
About 450 programs.
Amazing.
Again, about 450 music teachers, band and orchestra teachers.
We have to be mindful that Indiana, we refer to this area, this region, with love and affection as the band belt.
Absolutely.
We are here where there are traditions of communities knowing that music education is just part of what you do when you're a young person.
That's right.
Really not an option, right?
Yeah, we're so fortunate to have it be, an important part of our culture in Indiana. Mm-hmm. I was talking yesterday at our meeting, which I know we're going to discuss a little bit. Those band and orchestra and arts parents are a force to be reckoned with in Indiana, because the arts are so important. And it's a great tradition that we want to keep strong.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, when you were at our beloved chairman at NAMM, even I think before you came onto the executive committee, you participated in your first fly-in, NAMM's first fly-in. And,
yes.
And you went to visit your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And I actually really closely remember being with you for those first meetings. Mm-hmm. And then something really started to take hold in you over the years. And about a year ago, you organized the Indiana Arts Education Network together with the steering committee.
Right.
Tell us about that,
how that happened with
arts education. It's officially the Indiana Arts Education Network that really was created as a social entrepreneur, a social enterprise. Tell us about it. Where
sure.
is it?
Well, we actually started about 3 years ago as a steering committee. Started with myself and Lane Velayo from Indiana Music Educators Association and Rusty Briel from the Indiana State School Music Association. Just sat down and had a conversation about where we were as a state. And there was a coalition that had launched prior to that and kind of launched and bubbled up and then kind of faded. And so, you know, we wanted to see where we were and talk about how we could get to where we could do this advocacy thing at the state and local level on a sustainable basis. And so that conversation turned into another, and then we ultimately ended up bringing on a few more people onto the steering committee. We brought Matt Carter from Visit Indy, representing the city of Indianapolis, brought John Whitman from Yamaha, and Mike Campice, Director of Education from Kahn-Selmer. And so we got together and we just started meeting and talking about where we are, what are the issues, and how can we have an impact. And we did that for about a year, really just getting together and getting to know each other and talking about where we needed to go. And you were along for many parts of that along the ride. And there was a time when we didn't quite know where to go, and you gave us some wise counsel and said, you know, go out and have a little mini listening tour.
Well, feasibility study.
Right. So right. We did that. You know, the six of us, by then Rusty had left, but the five of us, we all made appointments with elected officials and superintendents and just people in the community that we thought would have influence or information that could help us. And it was very, very helpful to go through that process because we learned a few things in that time. We learned that, number one, you know, nobody's against arts education, right? Everybody's for it. That being said, a lot of people don't understand what it takes to make it happen. And so there's a lot of decisions that are made with unintended consequences. We found that our state legislature in Indiana is they're hesitant to mandate things, very conservative legislature. With that being said, there are still things that are legislated that have unintended consequences that impact arts education negatively. We learned that it's always about money, right?
Or you're told it's always about money.
Yes, we're told it's always about money, and yet that's not the whole picture, right? Some people feel like we don't have enough money. Others feel like it's a matter of priorities, but money is at the heart of the issue. So, you know, we learned some valuable lessons. And then as we were getting about to that point, we heard that ESSA was about to pass.
Our federal new our new education, the December miracle, December 2015.
That's right. So, you know, at that time, we weren't really working at the state level. We weren't doing anything other than kind of studying and finding our way. And then ESSA passed, and we all, you know, I was in the room, and we kind of celebrated that. And said, this is great, you know, and then we realized that now the work that we had been doing for 10 years plus at the federal level needed to be done at the state level.
And a new opportunity really presented itself.
New opportunity, new responsibility, and that drove us to officially launch the Indiana Arts Education Network. We had our first meeting in at DCI in 2016, so August of 2016. And the steering committee we just got our Rolodexes out and started reaching out to people that we thought might be interested. So NAM members from around the state, education organizations, community organizations, anybody who had a stake in arts education, we invited them to the table. In our first meeting, we were so fortunate also along the way to be supported by NAM and NAFME and Americans for the Arts. And so you and Lynn from NAFME and Jeff from Americans for the Arts came and spoke at our first meeting. And we kind of coalesced at that time around Indiana's plan for ESSA, because that was the issue of the day. And we really spent our first year focusing on that issue. So we launched the network. To use a couple of phrases that I've learned from you, from the get-go, we decided that our organization was going to be about action. We were not interested in meeting to inform than just go away and, you know, nothing happens. And then we, in everything that we do, we are relentlessly positive, right? Because there's so much negativity in the way that people complain about what's happening with arts education that I think that drowns out the message. The message is a very positive message.
And the attention.
Right.
Right.
So nobody wants to listen to whining, right?
Right.
And so...
Well, they do. Well, if you look at our career, maybe they do, but it's not going to come from us.
That's right. So, you know, we try to couch our message in a positive way. We have tons of research to back up, you know, why arts education is important. So we went to work on that, and that's a very long story, but I'll keep it short. Went through some activities within the Department of Education. The election happened. We had to go back and do it again.
Yes, you had a little bit of a jagged journey there.
Right, yep. But we kept at it. You know, we were relentlessly positive. And long story short, the Indiana Department of Education released their, we had many opportunities to give them input. They released their draft in July of 2017, and we got nothing that we asked for. And we said, oh no. But we're relentlessly positive, right? And so we went back. There was a public comment period that we flooded the Department of Education with. And lo and behold, when the Indiana plan came out, they had several very strong statements that support arts education as part of the curriculum, not extracurricular, but co-curricular.
Which is huge, Mark.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you know, and this, you know, the fact that someone was watching the mm-hmm. process, the network was in place.
Right.
There was a commitment to monitor, and then there was a commitment to act.
Right.
You know, it goes back to in the old days, six calls could change a vote. You know, maybe it's now 600 emails will change, but, you know, it's really, really significant what you did. Mm-hmm. And had that network not been in place,
that there language would not be there.
There would have not been a way to put out that call to action, you know, and someone sitting at an email and saying, send all.
Right.
Right. So.
Yeah. So the connections that we made during that time with people in the Department of Education were extremely important because we, you know, we had a face, you know, we had a relationship with someone that we could go to and say, hey, we talked about this. Now we don't see it here. What's the problem?
And our community, our sector. Mm-hmm. That represents X, Y number of school communities mm-hmm. and kids and public school and parents. Our sector is watching.
Right.
And we're waiting and we're insisting.
Yeah. So
that's great.
So, you know, that was
really significant.
That was a great right. bravo moment for us.
Right.
But now we have to shift our focus, right? Because we're not an organization that's about ESSA. We're an organization that's about ensuring that, you know, all Indiana children reach their potential. And part of that reaching their potential is through arts education. And so now we've moved to the next step, which is, you know, it's always very organic, right? The way this thing right. morphs. So we had our meeting of the network yesterday.
You had a big meeting yesterday.
A
big agenda, big, strong agenda.
Right.
Yeah.
So we had... We had it divided into two segments, one on state level advocacy and one on local and district level advocacy. We had two panels that spoke at the meeting. And the first panel, we had the chairman of the Indiana House Committee on Education and the ranking member of the Indiana Senate Committee on Education. So the two of the most important people at state level education were at our meeting. And then the third was Ken Folks, the Chief of Government Affairs for the Indiana Department of Education. So three really significant people, you know, so we ask them a series of questions about, you know, where we are and how we can move forward. And, you know, I can't distill all that down in the time we have now, but a couple of the really important outcomes of that portion of the meeting for me were when we asked them about how best to move forward and advocate for what we believe in. And to a person, you know what it came down to? Face-to-face, one-on-one.
Come and see me.
Don't sit.
Invite me to your event.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't
build a connection.
Don't send me an email blast with a bunch of email templates. That has its place. But if you really want to make an impact, make an appointment, come see me or invite me to your place of business and let's talk.
Wow, that's terrific.
That was amazing.
Three for three.
Yeah.
Basically said that.
Right, yeah.
And if I can just say, this is probably translatable to school board members, a local school board
member.
This is translatable to a superintendent's office. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, the local, building a local support, a local coalition in a community of where two or three parents are gathered together that care about music education, a coalition can be born, right? I mean, it's, and, you know, in a relentlessly positive, respectful way, go and have those conversations about how can we make this opportunity better? Mm-hmm. Because I think what we're learning across the spectrum of advocacy is people really care about this.
Right.
And now, but we have to take that goodwill and turn it into some kind of tangible action. Mm-hmm. Like, don't cut the fourth grade string program.
Right.
And build, you know, build the action for it.
One of the other things that Representative Banning said was, don't come to me with a complaint, come to me with a solution.
Right.
I thought that was extremely important because he gets so many people that just, you know, they shout out their complaints about, I don't like this, I don't like this, and never say what the solution is.
And part of the solution is, from an elected official's perspective, is that a lot of people care about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even if the complexity of funding and, you know, the road to making sure the right funding is there or the appropriations of funding is complex, if enough people say they care about it,
right,
the professionals in the room, as the staffer of the member or the staff of a school board or curriculum, they will help with the solution.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's really great.
The other thing at the state level, they said that they do pay attention to the research, but the research is so much more valuable when it's presented one-on-one and with a story. You know, with a personal story that goes along with it. And we saw that on both sides of the equation. Now, then we went to the local panel. So we had, we also had Dr. Folks from the Department of Education, because he just joined the Department of Education this summer. Prior to that, he was superintendent of East Allen County Schools up near Fort Wayne. So we had him put on his superintendent's hat. We also had Dr. Rob Hayworth, superintendent of Elkhart Community Schools, and then Marcia Neal, who's a senior director of education for Yamaha, but recently she was the head of secondary music education for Clark County Schools,
right
in Nevada. And so we asked them similar questions about what it takes to build and maintain and support arts programs. And we got different responses from them. Some things, I'm still working on distilling it, but a few key things that I remember about those comments were, first of all, the similarities. One-on-one is way more powerful than email blasts and all of that. So again, it's down to one-on-one relationship, me talking to you, telling you about what's important to me and why. When they talked a little bit about the research piece, we learned something. The national research that we tend to rely on is less effective at the district level. What they said was more effective is, show me how the kids that are in my program, how they are different from the kids that aren't in arts, mm-hmm. right? So show me some local some local statistics, and particularly about school culture, about behavior, about, you know, the culture of the school.
Attendance, graduation rates, community response
to
concerts.
It was much less, you know, kind of black and white hard facts and more heart issues, mm-hmm. right? Which I found very interesting. The other thing that they mentioned, which I think it's something that gives us a couple of new tools in our tool belt when we in our messaging. They talked about the economic realities of running a school district. And one of the things that came up a couple of times was they talked about how they, as leaders of their school districts, are actually competing with other school districts. They're competing for students. Now, they don't do that by trying to, you know, steal students away, but they're trying to build school districts that are strong enough that people want to move there and have their kids go to that school. And one of the most important strengths a school district can offer to attract families to the district is a strong arts program.
Wow.
That's
huge. It was just that clear.
Yeah, it's very clear.
And they're putting it out there in a way. I haven't heard it kind of that clearly stated before.
Right.
Yeah.
So again, to me, that tells me that we've got a way that we can tweak our message. Mm-hmm. And when we take that message to local school boards, you know, we know their triggers, right? Mm-hmm. Their triggers are, of course, why is that important to them? I asked that question and it came down to, we need to attract people to our district because with the people come the dollars, and with the dollars come our ability to serve these students.
Our per student per capita state reimbursement.
Exactly.
This just boils down to economics.
Exactly.
That way. Well, you've inspired me with a couple of ideas. You know, we've talked to, there are some very interesting kind of program evaluation templates.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's been a bit of a movement for music and arts programs to produce sort of an annual report.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even mm-hmm. the idea of a PowerPoint, this many kids are involved, this many kids have elected to go on to AP, this many kids have gone to our honors programs, this mm-hmm. many kids. So to make sure that just the basic metrics
right.
that are just right in front of a program every day mm-hmm. are sort of accumulated, you know, put in a presentation and shared on the school board level and whatnot.
Yeah, one of the people at the table yesterday was a string teacher. She represents Indiana chapter of the American String Teachers Association.
ASTA, yeah.
And she says, this data that you're looking for, I've got it on my desktop right now.
Every day.
I can look at each student and, you know, my principal can tell you which ones have behavioral issues or attendance issues. And it's very easy to put that all in a grid and say, you know, how do those who are actively involved in the arts compare to those who aren't? So the data is pretty easy to get to.
Especially now we've come through a period of such data-driven
right.
A collection of so much data.
Right.
Well, I think maybe we have a few more projects we could work on, Mark.
That's the way this thing works, right?
Right? Isn't it? And, you know, this is the year now, once the Indiana State Plan is reviewed and approved and mm-hmm. adjusted, the next level is that every school district is supposed to submit a plan.
Right.
So again, there's a lot of opportunity within your network to influence that.
The work never ends, right?
Yeah.
It's evergreen.
So you've shared so much here. I guess some great best practices too. I mean, yeah. You're by just going through it and creating it. I guess I want to dig a little bit deeper. What have you learned personally? What are, you know, the things that you are by leading this charge and organizing it and keep going back to the table and back mm-hmm. the highs and the lows. I mean, you were in the front row when we stood up and celebrated the passage of ESSA at the Midwest Clinic. It was
right.
just a few, actually just within 10 days of that. And then to know we were together a year later
mm-hmm.
with the election.
Yeah.
And, you know, your governor becoming mm-hmm. the vice president.
Right, right.
And, of course, we've had a whole new set of kind of national challenges, which for me galvanizes our work even more. It galvanizes the work to create these grassroots music education, music and arts education opportunities are even more urgent.
Yeah, this was brought up yesterday's meeting too, is that, you know, I think it goes in line with that being relentlessly positive. You never stop doing the work because the people that you're connecting with change, right? And so at the state level, at the district level, people change. Elections happen, you know, school board members come and they go, and you have to continually be in there and educate them and tell them, you know, why. And so that's why the work never stops, right? It has to continue. It's not an event, it's a process.
Right.
Right. So we have to just keep at it.
Any, is that one, obviously that's one of your big takeaways, but any other big takeaways about the work? I mean, here you are running a very successful business,
right.
a legacy business in mm-hmm. Indiana, you know, being a direct contact and employing a lot of people, caring for their families, all these things. And now you've kind of, you know, you are now leading mm-hmm. a statewide charge for an issue close to your business,
right.
but at the same time with a whole nother skill set. Right?
That's for sure.
A toolkit
right.
that is not part of, you know, some things cross over, communications,
right.
outreach. What are some of the things that you probably never thought you would be doing because of this work?
Well, you know, I think it goes back to your earlier question about my reaction to participating in the fly-in. I think what I've learned through this process is that, you know, the job of doing advocacy is not complicated. It really isn't. It's as simple as making an appointment to meet with someone who has influence over the issue and sharing your message. The message is easy. We live the message. So that's the easiest thing in the world to come up with. But it really is shoe leather. I mean, it's just about taking your time, which the flip side of that is one of the challenges, is because we get a bunch of people in a room and they all agree this is all very important. Yeah, we need to do that. And we come up with a few action plan items and then we leave and, you know, life happens, right?
Everybody has their own
people
lists.
They leave with the best of intentions. And then, you know, as my former boss, Warner Page, used to say, he had this saying about whenever we would go to conferences like NAMM or NASMD and we'd fill up our notebooks with great ideas, right? He says, when you get back to the office on Monday morning, the very first thing happens is the toilet overflows.
Right.
Right? It brings you back
right.
to reality.
Or someone
right?
lost their keys, right?
Right
and no
right.
one can get into the main.
So that stuff
right,
gets
right.
in the way of
right.
this. And right. so, you know, it really, just like what I said earlier about you have to be relentless and we have to be consistent taking our message out. We have to be consistent at communicating with our network. Right. To remind them and urge them and encourage them.
That they feel they're part of something.
Right.
These things are, you know, they're not concrete. They mm-hmm. kind of live in the abstract.
They're a little squishy, like we
well,
like to say, right?
They live in the abstract.
Right.
You know, and a network of people that care. Well, they have occasional meetings, mm-hmm. but then they need to have the leadership of a steering committee or your volunteer leadership in mm-hmm. all of it to point to some directions.
Right.
Now, this is next.
Yep.
This is the next on the hit parade
right.
that we're doing.
Yeah.
And then, some debate follows, but then over time, it mm-hmm. tends to embed in those organizations.
Yeah, I think that's an important component too, because you don't just flash on the scene and change the world, right? You come and you get to work mm-hmm. and you continue to work.
One of the realities of this work in, in our collective work as advocates mm-hmm. is what everyone has said. To a person, no one objects to this.
Right.
But the challenge is to get folks to do something about
mm-hmm.
it. And for us, it was on the federal level to insisting that it was in that new federal law.
Mm-hmm.
Because that law might last for a very long time.
Right.
And then going on to the state level, as you've done, to insist that it's in the state language.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the doing of the something.
Right.
Right? It's mm-hmm. like doing it. So I think we'll always have that as a challenge. I mean, that's just a basic of mm-hmm. a challenge of life, getting mm-hmm. all the stuff that we want to get done. And then leading it is a whole nother opportunity that you've taken on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Piece of your life that you're dedicating to it. Are you getting back some things that you never thought you would get back? And that more frustration, maybe?
A little of that.
Or as I said to other NAMM members that have taken this on who, sort of have, bow their heads and shake their heads. They said, well, sorry, you're now a community organizer.
Right.
You know, you're taking what you really care about and right. putting it into action on the policy level and the communications level, on the networking level.
I have a bit of capacity. As you know, I recently wrapped up a role with
you certainly have
with NAMM
capacity,
that
yes.
took on some
yeah.
took some time. So yeah. I have a little time to be able to do it. But I think more importantly, it's important to me personally. I mean, and I'm not so sure that that what we do in the network is going to positively impact my business anytime soon. But that's not what it's about.
Right.
It's about yep. helping kids reach their potential and ensuring that arts programs are strong for the next generation and the next generation. And so it's a passion project. You know, it's something that's important to me personally. And so I'm in. I'm committed.
You know, it's really to a person that we talk to on Talking at Music Education, our podcast, and folks that are doing this work in there, this is deep for us,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you know, our eyes have welled up over this.
Absolutely.
They have.
More than one time.
They have. You know, I mean, being here with these music education, these kids that are the, you know, I mean, they don't know the imaginations of what's around them to make that opportunity.
Right.
But, you know, we kind of do.
Yeah.
Right. And then we cross over into that place to say, XYZ need to be here.
Yep.
For that 10-year-old to come in to that first instrument.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
So we're, it's a passion project, and we're really grateful. Any final thoughts of all of us here at Indianapolis, your hometown, for this great event? Any final thoughts for us and the work that we need to do
just
together?
Yeah, just keep doing it. I think the, you know, we keep learning along the way, every step, as Joe Lamont likes to say, you know, you feel your way across the river one stone at a time. I think that's the reality of advocacy. And we're not in it alone, right? So we have people that we can reach out to and connect with, and that's really important. So I've talked with a handful of people that are doing the same thing in other states, and, you know, we get together and we talk, and they, how did you do this? And what did you do when this came up? And, you know, we have resources to help us with that.
And that was always the vision of the Support Music Coalition, was to become a learning network.
Right.
And I think that we just kind of keep growing. And now we have our coalition on coalitions, which is you helped us formulate.
Mm-hmm.
We have NAM members that are sitting on the state planning at the table in states all across the country. So it's really, really interesting that their competency continues to rise, their networks in their states continue to rise.
Right.
And again, you know, I get notes and responses from these folks, and it's because they really care. They really care deeply about this opportunity for kids in their state. So
yeah,
that's
probably the most important component, is that you care.
Because really care deeply. Yeah.
When you care, it shows in your actions and your emotions. And when you're having that one-on-one with someone of influence, they can see that. If you're just there spouting off some statistics that you don't really care about, they can see that too.
And in that way, we're so blessed with our network and with what we're working for.
Right. Thank goodness we're in the music and arts business.
Thank goodness we're in the music and arts business for more than one reason, more than many reasons. Well, Mark, what a great joy to see you here in Indianapolis,
too,
to spend
Mary.
A little time with you. We've had quite a wonderful journey over the years.
Yes, we have, and it's not over.
It's not over.
Right.
You're going to be a part of our coalition, our Support Music Coalition activity, and everything that happens at the NAM Foundation. You just walked past your picture on the wall at NAM headquarters last week. The hit parade of former chairman. It's we're so lucky to have your great leadership and the leadership of so many in the NAM community. I think we need to do our own standalone brochure, a message from Mark Goff here. We've heard wonderful tips and ideas to be effective advocacy and to how to stay the course. So, Mark, thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
And thank you for joining us here talking at Music Education, a podcast of the NAM Foundation.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. Nam. That's Mary L. N. A. M. M.